across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
In a time with Hadron Colliders punching holes into another dimension, AI and quantum computers creating life simulations, telepresence robots that are killer robots owned by search engine company. I mean, frequency modulation devices manipulating the planetary life force and sending messages into deep space along with bad movies. I mean, how do we relate this to our hearts, minds, and souls? Tonight, we're going to talk with Michael Feely. He's a former UK police officer and expert witness who uses 17 years of evidence gathering and investigative experience to decipher these secret and complex codes that are all around the world, languages used by the chosen initiates who hold the keys that unlock this door of knowledge that opens a portal into our soul, showing us that all of these devices of the 21st century relate to our inner being. So we're going to take this deep because Michael is also a multiple paranormal experiencer, and along with UFOs, he is now a code breaker of this hidden knowledge. So please welcome to the Free Zone, Michael Feely. Michael, welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for listening.
Yes, we have a great audience here, Michael, and they love things like your book, The Ancient Code, A Serpent Fire. They love digging into the mysteries of the Great Pyramids and relating all of this into our 21st century timing is something else. And I think that's where you really shine, is this understanding of the ancient past, things like the Great Pyramid. I mean, obviously, if you do any study into things like Baalbek, Lebanon, the Great Pyramids all around the planet, we see clearly that we can't even, and we would not even, build such a thing in the 21st century. But yet we have related devices that go along with exactly what these things seem to do. Some things like CERN and particle colliders and punching holes into the other dimension and even into stargates. And, you know, we sent the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still to Alpha Centauri. I mean, this is a crazy time to finally decode this mystery that's hidden in our ancient past and relates to the technologies of the 21st century, and you're the guy. So let's dig deep into this, Michael.
Yep, I'm very, very well into that, so it's going to be a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, where shall we begin with this idea then? I mean, this really has to do with the heart, souls, and minds of humanity, but we're looking at these three-dimensional objects, computers, pyramids, and we don't have a relationship between that in our modern world to understand that there could be a connection between punching holes in the other dimension and the soul of man.
Well, there certainly is. And again, I've spent many years now looking very, very deep into the ancient world. And when you look at all of these ancient cultures that we are told are individual entities that had no connection between the two, then the information that I've been able to decipher blows that out of the water, quite frankly, because all of the ancient cultures from Stonehenge to the pyramids of Egypt to Easter Island to the lands of Atlantis and Lemuria, all the way around the pyramids of the world, even to the pyramids on planet Mars that have a connection to the monuments of Earth, all of them are giving us one message, because there really is only one message to give, and that message is about our own inner enlightenment. That is why I call it the ancient code, because all of these ancient cultures are telling us the same thing, but it's encoded within the sacred scriptures of the Bible, the scripture, within the famous monuments of the world. The message has never changed. The only thing that has changed is the shape of the monuments themselves, whether it's a concentric circle, whether it's a pyramid, whether it's a gigantic head and body on Easter Island. The only things that ever changed were the shapes of the monuments, but that message, that one message, remained the same. And when you look really, really deep, as I have for the last 10 years now, 2019 will be the 10th anniversary of my so-called spiritual awakening and sort of paranormal and multidimensional experiences that was enough to make me leave a career that I never envisaged ever leaving. And I spent 17 years as a frontline police officer dealing with all different levels of crime and all different levels of investigation. And I never anticipated leaving that career. But the things that I began to experience around about 2009 or just prior to 2009 was enough to tip my own scales of balance. It was enough to make me resign from a career that I was there for life for. So, as you can imagine, that must have been some kind of shaking of the roots of that oak tree to get somebody to actually leave a lifetime career that they'd spent many, many years attempting to actually get into. So when you look into all these ancient cultures, there's about inner enlightenment, our Amun Ra, our hidden light, our hidden sun, which is that inner illumination. And as Confucius once said, signs and symbols rule the world, not words nor laws. And when you look into this clandestine language that is used by the so-called elites or the chosen ones or the Illuminati or the deep state, whichever way you wish to give them a name or how you wish to address them, it is all the same thing. It is that deep state. It is that small percentage of secret societies that hold on to sacred ancient knowledge, and they hide it behind symbols, behind metaphors, behind encoded signs. And that is really what I've been deciphering for the last several years.
Now, was it a lifetime of paranormal experience and then some major extraterrestrial connections that broke the bond between you and the real world?
Well, it certainly was. I mean, again, coming up to 2009, that was the real pinnacle year, although a few things did happen prior to 2009. And what happened in 2009 is I was asked by a murder victim who subsequently found out would actually be murdered by a stepfather in Victorian England in the year 1850. And I was actually asked to investigate her murder. That then led on to multiple UFO sightings, both day and by night. That then led on to me witnessing dimensional gateways, dimensional portals opening up in the sky or in dense forestry, and seeing some kind of craft actually emanating from the wormhole. That then led on to actually coming face to face with somebody who is not of this world. That led to all different kinds of things, telepathic messages, sort of telepathic messages to go to a certain place. There's all of these things happening. I was getting shown a golden key in my mind's eye, which I didn't initially realize what it meant. But then looking into it, it means that the Gnostic key of knowledge, the worthiness to receive ancient knowledge. And that followed with lots and lots of downloads of sacred, secret information that was able to sort of piece together to make a one big picture that connects the ancient code and connects the whole of the ancient cultures. So it was really a mixed bag, but the year 2009 was really a pinnacle year that made me leave the world that I've been a part of, and it forced me to now be part of a new world that I was beginning to experience. So it was a 360 degree turn from what I was doing to what I do now.
Absolutely. I mean, people always wonder, how will my life change after meeting an extraterrestrial? And I think you're going to answer that question today.
Well, certainly that one and many others. And I think that the answer in a very succinct way is you can never look back. Your life is never the same again.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. And when the code is broken, then nothing seems the same anymore. When we think of our space program, and we had the Atlas, the King of Atlantis, launching Apollo to the moon, we have now, they retired the Columbia Endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis, and we're back to Atlantis again. And recently, even this week, Merlin engines have launched a Falcon to release the Dragon. These are the codes that are constantly in front of us, and this is just the space program, you know. It's just one faction of all of this, and we can see the code. I mean, Merlin, Atlantis, Ra, Apollo, Atlas, Columbia, you know. It's all right there in front of us, but if you don't have the key, this golden key, then it just are names, just titles, and no one reads into them.
Well, that's right. And if you're not at the same vibrational frequency as these secret coded messages, then you will not see them. And everything in the universe is a sacred geometric shape, which relates to a mathematical sequence. But each of these numbers, each of these shapes have an energy. They have a vibration, as does everything else in the universe. If you match the vibration of these secret messages, then you will see them. But you're quite right. The majority of people will never see them because it's just a pretty pattern that is part of architectural design. Really, in essence, it isn't. It's a secret language. It's a secret message. And of course, Apollo, Ra, all of these things that you mentioned, you know, the launch pad, X-33. 33 has connotations to the story of Christ, to Freemasonry, to the story of Atlantis. So even numbers, even the numbers that are chosen for a specific secret language reason. And nothing is by chance. Everything is right before our eyes to see. They are telling us everything, but the majority of people are failing to see the message.
Absolutely. I didn't mention that the OSIRIS-REx had also landed on the Bennu, but how this relates to us, how this story coalesces to the soul, I think a classic example of this is looking at the Eye of Ra from ancient Egypt, the sun god. But that symbol that we see, that eye, can clearly be laid upon the brain and seen depicting the third eye. And I think that that one symbol for you should open a door of everything that you could talk about in the ideas that these signs and symbols relate to the body.
They certainly do, and certainly in relation to, as I say, not just Egypt, although Egypt is really, I have found, quite a foundation stone for many other secret cultures. When you go into the Kabbalah, when you go into Christianity, when you go into Greek philosophy, when you go into all of these places, a lot of that comes from the foundation, which is ancient Egypt. Now, ancient Egypt, with their gods, with their monuments, with their sort of initiation processes through the Sphinx into the Great Pyramid and so on, the philosophy and the principle of ancient Egypt was enlightened consciousness. And I found that all of their gods were metaphors for that. Their monuments were basically power stations to amplify the process of what they called the God state, which in the Bible is really the Christ consciousness. When you look at, and you spoke about CERN, the Great Pyramid is basically the Large Hadron Collider, or certainly the original Hadron Collider, because that was amplifying sound waves and amplifying mathematical sequences in order to create dimensional gateways. So you have all of these component parts that lead you through to ancient Egypt, and it's all to do with initiation. It's all to do with that God state, that enlightened consciousness that they were spending many years trying to achieve. And the priests of the mystery schools of ancient Egypt were known as the lions, because we're then talking about enlightened consciousness, the sun, the solar consciousness, the light, which is all to do with wisdom. And because they were known as the lions, and the gateway to get to these pyramidal sort of initiations was through the Sphinx, and the Sphinx is of course a lion that faces east. East in cardinal points is all to do with illumination and enlightenment. So we're going through the initiates, the chosen initiates, the lion, to become the lions, the initiated ones, the enlightened ones, the Illuminati, or whichever you wish to name them. And the actual pyramid itself, the Great Pyramid, is really a giant replica of the endocrine system of the human brain. And by endocrine means secretion within. It is basically the three master glands of the third eye, which is your thalamus, which is your pineal gland, which is your pituitary gland. In Egyptian gods, that is Horus, Osiris, and Isis. And that is the three component parts of the endocrine system of enlightenment, your third eye, your three master glands of your third eye. Now, when you put a human head facing north, because the pineal gland, the master gland, is known as the North Gate, If you put a map oval over the human head facing north, over the Great Pyramid, you can clearly see that where the King's Chamber is situated, the pineal gland is situated, where the Queen's Chamber is situated is the pituitary gland, and you also have in there the thalamus, which is Horus. So you have the basically a giant replica of these three master glands of the human brain. I watched an Egyptian documentary a few weeks ago when you had all the Egyptologists and all the scholars scratching their head as to what the subterranean chambers actually mean inside the pyramids. What they actually mean, they represent the subconscious mind or the subterranean mind, which is the good shepherd, which is the provider. So the subconscious mind feeds the conscious mind. That is the subterranean chambers, and that is the upper chambers. That is basically the component parts of the human brain. That is what the Great Pyramid is a giant replica of. And when you look at all the mathematical sequences that form part of the Egyptian pyramids, such as pi, such as the golden ratio, such as Vesica Pisces, such as the golden mean, the Fibonacci sequence, all of those are actually mathematical sequences that vibrate at a consciousness-raising frequency. And the giant pyramid is basically amplifying these sonic waves in order to transmit, in order to open dimensional gateways. So the, all of these ancient cultures, you know, you've got Teote, which is an abbreviation of thought, and thought is an intransitive form. It's basically a consciousness without form, which then becomes a physical manifestation. So the god Teote on the boat, the solar boat. The solar boat is basically only the enlightened ones can sit on the seat. It's to do with enlightenment and initiation. The baboon that is sometimes seen with Teote, the baboon is also a symbol of the master initiate. And it's also, when you open up the brain, you can see that the olfactory tract, which deals with sensory awareness, mimics the baboon. And that's what the Egyptians, as you were still talking about, the olfactory tract, the olfactory consciousness. So the whole of Egyptian society, the number 153, which is the master initiate, which forms part of the Vesica Pisces, which forms part of the face of the giant sphinx. It's talking about the master of the net, the master initiate. So the whole of this, the Egyptian cultures, the whole of the ancient cultures of the world were telling us that they were master initiates, they were masters of the net, and they were the chosen initiates to hold on to this sacred knowledge. And they've left a clue to this esoterically in the gigantic and fabulous monuments of the world.
Well said. Absolutely. And in case people got a little lost there, we were talking about these Egyptian gods and Thoth being the god of magic, the god that became Hermes, that came through time as Mercury. Is also known as Tahuti. And so I'm just clarifying these for the listeners because his spirit animal, his icon was the baboon, which always makes me think of Obama carrying that monkey in his pocket. But but so Thoth, Tahuti, and the baboon, you can learn a lot about that by reading the Red Pyramid series by Disney, and they'll show you how these god forms are taking over children. But then we get to Horus, Isis, and Osiris. Now, this plays a heavy role within Masonic symbolism. And when you see something like a canted square, folks, you know, a square turned on its corner, this is the sign of that very trinity of Isis, Horus, and Osiris. And it relates to the 47th proposition of Euclid, making right angles. And so this speaks heavily to how the Freemasons are, again, showing us these ancient artifacts in modern mathematics and how much the language of the universe is math.
It certainly is. And the likes of Plato that used to teach sacred geometry to his chosen students at his academy, which was initially part of early Christianity through the Gnostics, but that was eventually ceased under the crime of heresy. And from that point, metaphors were used as a way of hiding truth, but also as a way that these initiates, these chosen ones, could actually interpret this hidden wisdom between themselves. So everything became a metaphor, and you have all your biblical characters like Jesus, like Mary Magdalene, Mary and Joseph, Noah, Moses. All of these characters are not real people. They are metaphors for our deeper essence, which is yourself. So everyone is Jesus Christ. Everyone is Mary Magdalene. Every one of us are all these biblical characters. All of these ancient cultures, even Atlantis and Lemuria, were not real places. They are metaphors for consciousness. Everything I found in the ancient code is a metaphor for human consciousness, and it is really telling you in an esoteric way how to achieve your own Christ consciousness, which is 33 hertz, which is why Jesus died age 33 in 33 AD, which is why there are 33 degrees of masonry. The word amen numerically relates to the number 33. As I've previously said, NASA's launch pad is X33. You have 33 turns of DNA to complete a sequence. You have 33 vertebrae of the human spine, and the 33rd vertebrae of the human spine is now medically as Atlas. Now, Atlantis means the island of Atlas, and the island of Atlas is the pineal gland, because the pineal gland, as Plato said, is the island that rules seven, which is how he described Atlantis. The pineal gland is between the left and right hemisphere of the brain. It is surrounded by the cerebrospinal fluid. Therefore, it is an island. It is the master gland that rules chakras. It is the island that rules seven. So Atlantis is the pineal gland. It is human consciousness. When we move over to Lemuria, we're then talking about Queen Mu, who is another name for Isis, who is the pituitary gland. So we have this Lemuria, and we have Atlantis, which is that masculine, feminine, androgynous consciousness, the union of the masculine and feminine, the pituitary gland and the pineal gland, Isis and Osiris. So whichever culture you wish to put that to, they are all giving us the same message, which is enlightened consciousness.
Huh. And in the story of Atlantis and Lemuria, we've got this separation with the mythos that has come through time. The idea that Atlantis was this superior technological race that were somewhat warlike, and then the Lemurians, who were more of a synchronistic race and in touch with the divine and the cosmic synchronicities. And that these two things are battling. So that would make another sense into this of how we are dealing with spirit and matter.
Well, of course, we're also dealing, as you just said, with the masculine and the feminine aspect of self. Now, the feminine is your nurturing, your peaceful side, and your masculine is often your warlike side. So you have this, as the Egyptians called it, the chemical marriage, the union of your masculine and feminine. It is all to do with the balance of opposites, that dualistic balance, in order to achieve your own God state. So Atlantis and Lemuria, one warlike, one peaceful, is really your masculine and feminine aspects that need to be merged as one. So it is basically the union of male and female in this dualistic reality.
So now we've come to a time where the Vatican has said, hey, we'll baptize ET no matter how many tentacles they have. We have Lucifer telescopes seeking Goldilocks planets that are capable of life. And we are at the same time punching holes into the other dimension, and scientists are claiming something may come through. So as we take what's going on now, and we relate this to our ancient past and understand that, as you're saying, the pyramid was somewhat of a stargate. Particles, protons, light, information carrying mass going out through these particle accelerators that we have. And then the idea of bringing something else through. I mean, are we at this crux moment again where, I mean, we don't know if it was like the movie Stargate, that they had to shut down the Pyramid of Ra to keep these dimensional beings from coming in and taking over our bodies and enslaving humanity. I mean, that's the story of Stargate, the television series or the movie, that we were battling Ra and we had to shut down the Stargate. And now we're at a point where we're technologically reopening that Stargate. It's kind of a crazy time.
Well, there are stargates, and certainly in relation to some of the ancient monuments, there was the transit coming and going of different beings. I'm certainly of the opinion that we've always been visited, but I'm also of the opinion that many of the races that we see as aliens who are visiting Earth were actually originally here before us, because many of these monuments, there's very little documentation as to who built them. Now, the Egyptians documented everything, and yet they didn't document building the pyramids. And some people have suggested that maybe the civilization that we know as the ancient Egyptians may have come after the pyramids were built, and that fits in with a theory that I have, that many of these, what we call alien races, were here before we were, and we're actually the aliens visiting Earth. So, but we do transiting between different dimensions. I mean, when we look at the Sidonian city, and there are many opinions as to what the Sidonian city on Mars is. Some people just say it's a rock formation, but it's actually been measured out, I think, by Richard Seogland, as being a geometric purpose. And you have five-sided pyramids on Mars. You have a gigantic face on Mars. And when you start looking into the work of Karl Munk, who has basically come across what he calls the pyramid matrix, and he can actually prove that the grid vectors of these monuments on Mars give you the locations, the longitude and latitude locations of Stonehenge in the UK and the pyramids of Egypt in Giza. And the pyramids of Egypt in Giza and also Stonehenge gives you the grid vector coordinates of how to find the Sidonian city on planet Mars. You have monuments, for example, the lunar abaca, which follows the formation of the three major pyramids of Egypt. They are basically a series of six obelisks. Now, an obelisk is the symbol of Osiris from Egypt. And so we can prove mathematically, or certainly these mathematicians have proved mathematically, that there is a connection between different planets and Earth by the grid vectors of the different monuments. It's almost like a cosmic sat-nav. If you understand mathematics, you can find the monuments on Earth based on the monuments of Mars, and vice versa. So there's a clear indication mathematically that there is a sort of an intergalactic connection somewhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt at all that in the ancient past, mankind was interplanetary and lived on both Earth and Mars.
That there certainly was one civilization that was able to travel, or it is two different civilizations that we're obviously having some kind of interaction between the planets. That those are the two possibilities. And when you start looking at how the Egyptians created stargates, how the shafts of the pyramid faced towards certain star formations, you can then begin to see that they were actually transiting in an out-of-body state to different planetary systems. And they were also bringing and manifesting other planetary beings into this world through these stargates. So there's definitely a interaction going on.
Yeah, so many signs and symbols around us. If you look at the Egyptian symbol, the hieroglyph for Sirius, the dog star, we find an obelisk, a pentagram, and a dome. You go to any capital in America and you will find an obelisk, a pentagram, and a dome, actually, Austin, Texas has an amazing display of this, but the capital as well, our District of Columbia, and you know, whoever thinks about who's that, our Columbia goddess. But every sign and symbol, to the blazing star of Freemasonry, to the obelisk, dome, and pentagrams of every capital, we have a relationship to Sirius. And it's one of those great mysteries of how Sirius was worshipped by nearly every culture on the planet.
Well, certainly it's a very important, it is a superconductor of sort of a consciousness frequencies. It is the ascended version of Isis. As I say, it is the blazing star of Freemasonry. It is all of these things. It's in a binary with Earth's sun. And because of what is known as the Doppler effect, which is all to do with vibrations and colours of stars, when Sirius is going away from the sun, it is red. And when it's coming back towards, it is blue. You then go into the Hopi Indian red and blue star Kachina prophecy. So you have Sirius that is very, very deep, you know, into all of these cultures, and especially Freemasonry. And when you look into Washington, D.C., Columbia, obviously another name for Isis. You have the Statue of Liberty, which is Isis, that faces Paris, which comes from the word Parisi, who were a Celtic group who worshipped Isis and named the city of Paris after her. And we have all of these ancient connections to this star system. It's also in the Bible. It is the star of Bethlehem that was followed by the three wise men, which is the three stars of the belt of Orion. So it's intrinsic within all of these different cultures that worship the stars, the constellations, the planets. It is a celestial narrative, the zodiac, you know, the wheel of Gad, the will of God. You have all of these stars intrinsic into the worship of these many, many different cultures. And Freemasonry obviously then leads you to the Kabbalah, to Judaism, which comes from, again, ancient Egypt, which then spreads all across the world. So these famous stars have great significance at an esoteric level.
Well, you've got me really wondering what we should be celebrating this December 25th. Where does, you know, what should we celebrate for Christmas?
Well, certainly the reason to celebrate Christmas in most parts of the world on the 25th of December is astronomy. Because on the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of December every year, the sun remains in the same degree of sky for 3 days. It is dead for 3 days. On the 25th of December, the sun actually moves and has been recorded to move 1 degree north to continue its annual transit through the zodiac. So therefore, on the 25th of December, the sun is born again. It moves that 1 degree north. On the 24th of December, you have Sirius A that forms an alignment with the three stars of Orion's belt. And together, they mark the exact position that the sun will rise in the sky on the 25th of December. So the actual date of the 25th of December is basically astronomy. That is why the date is particularly chosen.
That makes more sense. When we think about the amount of effort the ancients put into tracking the sun, tracking the celestial bodies, I mean, when we look at monolithic structures that would, you know, I always like look at the 20th, 21st century and say, we would never build a pyramid. We would never build a Stonehenge. You're not going to get the funding. The government's not going to get behind that and say, okay, let's build a massive pyramid. So form and function, again, just eluding us, or perhaps moving into the technological age where now we're using computers, microchips, and hadron colliders instead.
But of course, the actual pyramid shape is, again, derives from sacred geometry and the triangle. So the pyramid is a three-dimensional version of the triangle, and the triangle is the most stable form. It is where consciousness and matter meet the higher realms of existence. So it's all to do, again, the pyramid shape is all to do with enlightenment. When you get to the Great Pyramid, and again, I mentioned earlier the number 153. When you get to the Great Pyramid, you see above the entrance is a double chevron. Now, chevron comes from Shibua, which means the place of connection. It is where the spiritual and the material meet in unison. That is why you have two chevrons above the entrance of the Great Pyramid. Talking of the entrance of the Great Pyramid, it is on the 17th course level. Now, when you add all the numbers from 1 to 17, for example, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 and so on, all the way to 17, it equals 153. And if you use a mathematical formula of 1 plus 5 plus 3, you get 9, which is the number of divine completedness. It is the number of enlightenment. Great Pyramid is the 9th pyramid of 9. When you get inside the Grand Gallery, there are 153 steps, and it is 153 feet long, which is 46 meters. There's all these references to 153, the number of the master initiate. So the whole Giza plateau is all to do with enlightened consciousness and how to achieve it.
It's about time. It's about time we reflect back on that. And you got me thinking, Paul Laffoley, I had him on the show. He's passed now. But he was the Twin Tower architect, and I believe he was obsessed with the number 17 and wanted to put 17 passageways between the Twin Towers in case there was a fire. He was a massive esotericist. You would love his work. I highly recommend checking out Paul Affoli's artwork. I think you'll be completely fascinated by it. A brilliant, amazing man. But this brought in the idea of 9 and 9 and 11 and how these symbols and numbers also play a heavy role in this. It wasn't by accident, but
9 and 11
were coded in.
Nothing's by accident. And again, the number 153 is the 17th triangular number. So again, we have this numerical reference to enlightened consciousness. Now, in 2010, when I was sort of in the middle of my, eureka moments, I was going to go to Egypt on holiday with my wife. And we both had a strong urge that we needed to go to Egypt. But we also had a strong urge and knew that it was going to be more than just a vacation. It was going to be a working holiday, but we had no proof as to what that meant. Now, probably about a week or 2 weeks before we actually went to Egypt, we received a strange email from a psychic medium from Scotland in the UK. But she'd been asked to pass a message on from who she claimed was her spiritual counsel. Now, that message, I will read that message to you now. And it says, regarding your trip to Egypt, you will help uncover more insights and translate ancient knowledge brought to us from great distance. Under the Sphinx lies an ancient secret knowledge that will be added to your toolbox. Use this wisely for the benefit of all meaning past, present, and future. It all belongs together in the same place. You must absorb, accept, understand, and finally know. Only then can you share and teach. Now, this was a strange cryptic message from a psychic medium about a week or so before I went to Egypt on vacation. So that sort of confirmed our gut feeling that we were going there for more than just a vacation, that there was something going to be happening during that trip. Now, we went to inside the Great Pyramid, we went down the Nile, we went to the Cairo Museum, we went to all of these places of significance, but nothing, as far as I could tell, actually happened. 7 years later, and again, numerically, number 7 is important, but 7 years later, it all began to make sense when I received visitations from an Egyptian pharaoh, when there were scattered beetles manifesting out of the wall of my house, when there was Kundalini serpent fire energy scurrying away from my feet. All of these ancient Egyptian things were coming at me en masse, and there was lots and lots of sacred information in relation to the land of Egypt. And all of this information that came really, really fast at an advanced level has now sort of been absorbed, and it's now been understood, and it's now been accepted, and now started people about this ancient world of Egypt. So it's funny how all these synchronicities come together and they begin to make sense, albeit 7 years seems a long time for it to start to make sense.
Yeah, but it has to bring itself in. 11 years ago, I was asked to join the Kakulha Foundation for the first ever all-night ritual with the Mayans at the pyramids of Tikal. It was the first time ever, and I guess the last time ever, they were allowed to perform their winter solstice ritual throughout the night. And so I had the great joy of being invited out there and filming the entire scenario. They also wore their Masonic aprons as they performed these rituals. But the thing that really struck home for me was their idea of ancestors. That's what it was all about, was ancestral connections. And I think this speaks largely to the idea of genetic memory and how we can decipher and relate to this information that comes in these somewhat cosmic messages like you received.
We certainly can. And again, it's strange that you should mention Tikal, because when you look at what Tikal means, it means Tika, which is the pineal gland. Same with the word Vatican. That comes from Vatica, which means the third eye. That is why around the Vatican City, you see lots and lots of pine cones, statues. Pine cone gives us the word pineal, which is the third eye. So Tikal, Vatica, Tika means pineal gland. It is that spiritual site. So again, even the Mayans were giving us the same messages as all of these other cultures.
And then this would all really be a part of accessing our genetic memory, our ancestral DNA, to really walk through time to be able to bring these enlightened messages back to this consciousness that's been somewhat cut off in the 21st century.
It certainly has. I mean, science now is beginning to prove that we can, we do actually have ancestral knowledge as part of our DNA. It's that linear line, that genetic line. We have, at the moment, in our DNA, we have a 3 billion letter language. But in addition to that, we also have what science calls a junk DNA, which is protein-based. That really is not junk DNA. That is a dormant language. And when we are able to sort of reawaken that dormant language, what kind of information is contained within the genetics of the human body? Now, the genetics of the human body, when you look at the book of Genesis in the Bible, that really is a metaphor for the book of genetics, the book of genes, because the story of Adam and Eve, the story of Noah, the story of Jesus, the story of Mary, the story of Mary and Joseph, Moses, Cain and Abel, Samson and Delilah, you got Jonah and the whale. All of these stories are metaphors for genetics. And even the word Genesis comes from the gene of Isis, who is the cosmic mother. So we have a genetic reference that modern-day science tells us wasn't discovered until 1953 with the double helix and all of the work of Mr. Crick and his team. But the ancients knew, had an advanced knowledge of genetics many thousands of years ago, because they wrote it into the Bible, into the book of Genesis, the book of genetics. It is written into the sacred monuments of the world that is talking about how to achieve Christ consciousness, that higher level of God state consciousness. The ancients knew what science is now beginning to realize.
Are we going to need pyramids again to be able to access this? Or do you think that we're working our way towards it consciously?
Now, everything that we could ever possibly need to achieve this advanced state is within the human body. The pyramids are basically an amplification of what is happening inside the human mind. Now, bear in mind that the human mind is the Golgotha. It is the place of skulls. It is the temple of God. It is the upper mind is the house of God, which is, we get into prayer and the word Pharaoh, which comes from Pra, which means great mind. So everything that we could possibly need, we don't need churches, we don't need synagogues, we don't need mosques. Everything that we need is within us. Everything that we need to activate to reach this higher level is within us. So no, we don't need these monuments, but they were there to show us a message. They were there as an amplification that happens naturally inside us. Stonehenge is exactly the same. When they were basically, they were using the concentric circles that was harnessing Earth's Kundalini energy. The Presley Blue Stones that they used in Stonehenge has 7 bands of energy that connects and balance and cleanse the 7 chakras of the body. And this enabled basically that Christ consciousness to come through them. So all of these things were used as amplification of what is happening naturally inside us. But everything that we could ever possibly need is contained within us.
So we are on our way to the land of milk and honey.
Yes, and ironically, the secretion of the pineal gland is a white and brown secretion, which is the real meaning of the land of milk and honey. It is that inner consciousness, that inner awareness.
I honestly am ready, Michael, for scarabs to come through my walls, for extraterrestrials to communicate with me, for the life to open up these type of dimensional thoughts and bring about this transition in humanity, because we can't carry on much longer in this state of technological ignorance and just carry forward as if progress was the key.
Well, that's right. And I certainly think more and more people are now beginning to ask questions, which is which is the start, which is the, you know, it is the one atom before you get the, you know, the genetic body. It is the start of anything. People are starting to question. People are starting to, I certainly notice more and more people are ready for this kind of information. Yes. The kind of information which is really their rightful inheritance that has been stolen from them. And people are really, really ready for this kind of information.
Well, let's talk about your books, Michael. Let's make sure everybody knows what you got and where they can get it. I want, and then any discussions or things that you have to offer, like your Skype calls, or let's get some promotion out here for you. I mean, I know you have The Real Identity of Christ, The Secrets of the Codex Vaticanus coming out.
Yep, there's a number of books on there. Some of the earlier books that are on there basically detail my awakening, detail some of the experiences that are previously mentioned, you know, photographic evidence of the UFOs that I've seen and things like that. When you start to get towards the latter books, like The Ancient Cow of the Serpent Fire, it's dealing more with the esoteric knowledge that we're discussing there about Egypt and different places. The Real Identity of Christ goes deep into just that, The Real Identity of Christ, and it goes into a lot deeper, the esoteric world, and it reveals exactly who all of these biblical characters are through the genetics of the human body and through astronomy and through medical astrology, which is basically stars and constellations have an alignment with certain parts of the body. So for argument's sake, the constellation of Virgo in the zodiac aligns to your solar plexus, which is Bethlehem. Virgo is the Latin word for virgin, so that is the virgin birth in Bethlehem. And it basically goes into the correlation between astronomy and genetics, and it formulates the picture of just who these biblical characters really are. So it's going more and more sort of deep into the Gnostic esoteric information that had basically been kept from billions of people for thousands of years.
And like you say, they're ready. I think we will be celebrating something different this Christmas. I think those old tales are going to slip by and the true meaning be decoded. And we start to really focus on the human, on the body, the consciousness, and the power that comes with this. Divine synchronicities coming into our existence. The feeling like we are actually melded with the divine, as if we are a part of a greater system instead of these isolated beings that we're feeling like now in our social media worlds.
Well, certainly, and certainly the higher aristocracy of the church, of religion, know precisely the true meaning of these stories. But, as I say, at the point that they decided that knowledge was a privilege and not a right, at the point that they decided to keep this sacred knowledge to themselves and only shared it with the people that they chose to know, they began to create these fictional stories. The wooden Noah's Ark, the Moses walking through the deserts, the Jesus Christ that walked Nazareth, the Mary Magdalene that was meant to have been his wife or his partner, the Mary and Joseph, all of these biblical characters, they know full well never really existed as physical people. They know full well that these are simply metaphors that hide these greater truths. They know, and there's been several attempts by the Illuminati and the higher degrees of Freemasonry to actually recruit me into their ranks, which every time I've declined, because my opinion and my belief is that knowledge is for everyone and not just for the select few. So this information needs to come out. And those who are compatible with it, those who have a desire to know, they will find it, they will understand it, and it will elevate them.
Fantastic. I just lost my last thought there. So much going through my mind with this talk, Michael. It's fantastic. I love it. Because we, you know, I guess the last thing to think about there for people to really get this idea in this biblical narrative, we still speak of this apple with Adam and Eve, even though within the Bible itself, there is no apple ever. It's the fruit. And yet everyone knows that it's an apple, but this was actually something that was encoded into the story, not written in the book, but brought into our consciousness, this apple of paradise. And I guess that's one place to kind of finish up this first hour, the ideas of that we put things into the story. We don't even know where they come from. I'm not sure how the apple ever got equated with Eve, and yet the apple is a major symbol for this esoteric order.
Well, the apple, of course, it also takes you from Eden. It takes you to the King Arthur story with Avalon, which comes from the word Avaloc, which means the place of apples. Now, with the apple, it is purely metaphorical for consciousness. When you slice an apple widthways, it reveals the sacred geometric shape of the pentagram. The pentagram is the number five, which is the fifth element, which is the symbol of enlightened man, realized man, total knowing. That is why the apple features in the Garden of Eden. Eden means life. It is the human body. Adam and Eve are genetics. Adam is the organic atom, and Eve is a nuclear fission. It is the electron that is separated from the atom to create other atoms. It is the Ankh in Egypt. It is that the DNA replication or duplication of DNA, that is the Ankh. That is why Eden, Eve, Adam, and the apple are featured in the story. Even the serpent. The serpent is wisdom. It is the Kundalini energy that goes up Jacob's ladder, which is the human spine, which is part of the tree of knowledge. The apple is purely there because of its connection to the pentagram, which is the symbol of realized man, the number five.
This is a temple of man, folks, without a doubt. One look as you look around the world and see how many nations have used the pentagram as their symbol, and you've never wondered why. Now you know. I mean, we look at North Korea, China, Russia, America, over and over again, Egypt, the pentagram, and then pentagram over in Freemasonry. You'll find it all through there and all their lodges over and over and over again. Doesn't matter what nation, whether they're against or opposed to one another, this pentagram has been, and that's not an easy symbol to construct. If you're looking at an ancient, you need mathematics to perform a proper pentagram. It's one of those signs and symbols that you wouldn't just think of, hey, let's put a bunch of these very hard to cut icons on our flag, you know?
And of course, the planet Venus, which is the star of America, every 8 years, it orbits the sun in the shape of a pentagram. So you also have Lucifer, connections to the star, to Venus, which then has connections to the morning star and Jesus. So all of these things are actually intertwined to the pentagram and knowledge.
And there it is on your NASA launching its Atlas with Apollos, its Merlins with dragons, its Columbia's endeavors for discovery of Atlantis. And, you know, our movie symbolism, Lionsgate, you brought that up. You know, they make the creepiest movies out there. We have Atlas Productions. We have Atlantis Pictures, Columbia Broadcasting, over and over and over again. The signs and symbols are beating themselves into our brains. And it takes a mind like Michael Feely's to really unlock these secret codes that have been here through all time. Do you have lectures coming up or lectures that you would like to reference then you can get people to go see?
Yep, certainly. This 2018 marked my return to sort of going out and speaking to live audiences after several years of not doing that. So throughout 2018, I've been all around the UK doing talks. That recommences again in January, where I'll be doing some more talks in the UK.
Are these sort of on your YouTube?
They're all on my website.
Okay, michaelfeely.com.
Yeah. And basically at some point, hopefully, I will come overseas to the States or Canada or somewhere to spread knowledge further. Okay. But at the moment, it is in the UK.
Right. It's a long flight over that pond.
So people tell me.
Yeah, I don't recommend it, honestly. I came out there for the AV2 conference, and boy, I don't want to go back. But I had an amazing and wonderful time decoding and deciphering all the signs and symbols I found from London to Liverpool. And it was truly intriguing to me to see all of the dragon symbolism there in London, and then to go up to Liverpool and realize that it was all merfolk, all Atlantis, all, you know, they even had the goddess standing up there with her trident. It just speaks so many volumes to how much our civilization and those that are secretly guiding it have a relationship to Atlantis and this ancient past.
Of course, but again, it's all consciousness. London and America, in your parliament, in my government, and London itself, stems primarily from Egyptian symbolism. That the dragon is the symbol of the Christ force. The Christ force is the dragon rider. And then we go into the master of the serpent, and which is Kundalini. So it's all, again, reference to this enlightened consciousness.
It's all about enlightenment. It's getting in touch with your own pineal gland and finding the land of milk and honey so that we can transmute this craziness into a paradise as it should be. Because if we did not know that something was wrong, we would have no divine. It is within us to recognize that things are wrong. There is good and evil. And that's within us to know. There's no books. There's no studies. There's nothing that tells you good from bad. You know. And that's the key ingredient to this. And then the opening of these, of our own dimensional portals from deep within our brains, getting the pineal gland activated and getting these secretions into our body. That's where our focus is, not in the material plane so much, not trying to battle governments and try to take on the institutions, but to really raise ourselves through enlightenment so that the world will transform around us. Because as we have seen here, our body and our planet and our civilization all are one and relate through one another. Now, you can find all of Michael's work at michaelfeely.com. And of course, the links will be right here on freemantv.com. Michael, thank you so much. And I hope you're ready for another hour on the other side as we take it over to the members section and get deeper into some of Michael's paranormal experiences and understanding how this will change your life and how different life is once you've met an extraterrestrial face to face. And I got to mention, just because we're going to maybe talk about this a little bit too, getting into the Celtic reality of all of this, King Arthur, and we, of course, didn't touch the Ark of the Covenant yet. Michael and I are both descendants of Irish kings, so that should play an interesting role in the discussion on the other side. So if you're not signed up yet, come on over to freemantv.com and subscribe. Just jump on in. There's so much for you here. And let's give a big shout out to Steve Mercer for pulling together such an incredible year. Thank you so much, Steve. I mean, it has been an amazing ride. If you guys want to contact Steve, get him at producersteve@freemantv.com. I hope that you will spend this week digging deep into the early television shows of the Freeman perspective and getting a full understanding of how this whole story has unfolded from here. And then dig deep into michaelfeely.com to get the real esoteric data necessary to know how to get to the land of milk and honey. So thank you all so much, and I will see you in 2 weeks.